Welcome to the Law Shit You Should Know podcast. We're here to talk a little bit about the law
and a whole lot about nothing. Every week, we have a new guest to discuss current events, legal drama, and dive even deeper into
the Law Shit You Should Know.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to Law Shit You Should Know with Lita Santana
and Liz Marenko
and the amazing Adriana Gomez today. Hi Adriana.
Hello, how are you? Thank you for inviting me. I'm so good.
How are you doing today?
Very good.
Very good. So why don't you tell everybody watching and listening what you do and who you are?
I'm Adriana Gomez, and I'm an immigration attorney.
That's right. We're talking my favorite subject today.
Yes.
Yes. I'm Colombian.
I learned so much.
I was born in Colombia. I came here like 20 years ago. I'm an attorney in Colombia. Come here. I love being an attorney, so I came back an attorney. Well, study again, got my bar card, and now I practice immigration law.
Love it. And do you have any particular areas of immigration that you practice more than others?
Yes, I practice more like removal, petitions, family petitions, naturalizations, residency. But I do business immigration also. So I kind of like do a little bit of everything.
Mm-hmm. And asylum too, no? Don't you do a lot of asylum work right now?
Yes, I do a lot of asylums in removal or no removal procedures.
Awesome. Right. And so this topic is super timely because there's all kinds of brand new news. What else is new in the world of immigration?
Yes.
There's always news.
There's always something new. Like, you just turn next day, something's new is like, it never ends.
Yes, that's true. So let's talk about it. What's going on?
Well, there was a new executive order from President Biden that came out a few weeks ago. That unfortunately, we don't know if it's going to be enjoined, but most likely. But it is a great avenue to be into the executive order. It's like a great idea, which is to give people that are here, immigrants that have been here for 10 years, to be able to have a parole in place, which that means is they came to the border, so they're illegal. They're married to a United citizen, but they cannot get their residency. So when you enter through the border, you cannot adjust your status here in the United States.
So you entered illegally. Yes. Like you had no
legal status.
No visa.
You had no reason to come. Like you had no way in. Exactly. So
you had no permission to come.
You had no permission initially to
cross.
Correct.
Because some people, when we say you have permission, there's people who have visas. There's people who have status, like a green card that was granted at the consulate. There's people who come temporarily. There's ESTA, right, for the people
tourists.
So, like,
tourists. You were a student, you got here, right. And then you overstayed, you find love, you're fine.
You're good to go.
You're good to go.
Love happens.
But yes.
And we appreciate that in the United States. We're adorable. All about the love.
It's adorable. But if you did not come in through a student visa or through any other visa or whatever, then you had a problem adjusting.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So essentially, you have a penalty for coming in unlawfully and without permission.
And what is this penalty?
That you cannot apply for a green card. So you'd have to request a waiver, which, you know, colloquially called el perdón in Spanish. Right. Everybody knows el perdón. Yes. And then, but that's a lot more complex, and there's a lot of things that need to be done. And so what Biden's program has done is he's talking about doing what we call parole in place, which means he's paroling people in, which is what you call when they humanitarianly, when you present yourself at the border and CBP under humanitarian ground says, we're going to give you a parole, like they used to do with all the Cubans, right?
Right.
They let you in. And so parole in place is you're already here, but we're going to give you a parole even though you're already in place. And that's where the name parole in place comes from.
Okay.
So it's a really big deal.
It's a really big deal. But now you can adjust to it in the United States.
Right.
It's not like everybody.
So this is giving you
the entry.
The mechanism by which to adjust.
It's fixing the unlawful entry.
Ah.
Basically.
Okay.
So you have to be here for 10
years. So now you can find love.
Yes.
Okay. So you have to have already been here for 10 years and be married to somebody?
Yes. Yes. I know.
Well,
that's it.
It's a really big deal because it's estimated that there's about 500,000 people that are going to qualify for this.
That will qualify for this.
And actually about 25% of that 500,000 is in Florida. So there's something called cancellation of removal, which is only defensive. So it only happens when you get put in court. And cancellation of removal, essentially, you have to show extreme and unusual hardship to your U.S. citizen. Which is a super high standard because the courts don't say extreme and unusual hardship is, I'm sad, we're going to be separated, I'm going to lose my job. Like, no.
No.
Like, it's got to be.
Wait, hardship for who?
for the U.S. citizen.
Yeah, I was going to say, if I finally, after 40 years of age, find, you know, somebody that I want to be with and he gets deported? I mean, exactly. This is extreme for me.
Yes, no, immigration doesn't care about the immigrant suffering. The immigrant could be dying. Enough. That's irrelevant.
So it would help if you also have like a bunch of kids.
Exactly.
Sure. They're going to deport their parent.
Just because you have kids, that's not it. You have to have like a medical like situation, like you're sick. So you need your spouse more than me.
Right.
So your situation is unusual. The
standard is extreme and unusual hardship, right. And how that's defined. It's not always medical, but it's usually medical.
Yeah.
Because how do you show that your hardship is any more extreme and unusual than a normal person separated couple? Like if a normal couple is separated, they're going to suffer some hardship, but it's not extreme and unusual. And so this program, it created an affirmative path because before it was only defensive, and B, it eliminated the hardest factor. So it is a really big deal.
It is. And to me, the sad part is like why he did it now, because immigration is very political.
Yes.
Okay. It's all about politics and election year, right? So he throws on now when it's, to me, it's not late, but it should have been done sooner. But he had it in his pocket to throw it out at the end. So he can get more traction in the elections.
Yeah.
So now the other side is saying, oh, well, no, we're going to preempt to be put in place because we don't want that effect to change the elections and or like make a change in how the elections are going to go.
Parole in place has existed for military members. Like you could get a parole in place for your parents if they were here unlawfully. Yeah. So, for example, you have a kid, raise the kid here, kid joins the military, they can apply for a parole in place for parents, for a spouse sometimes.
Yeah.
It depends. I'm not super familiar with the military process. I don't know if you are. But it has existed.
And the difference with the military and their parents is that the parents have no recourse.
Yeah.
Right. Because those, they cannot go to their country and do the I-601 waiver because they don't qualify. So they're like, there's nothing for them to do.
Yeah. So the program itself is great, but... you know, a couple things. Number one, we expect lawsuits. We expect it to be enjoined. We'll see. You know, we're getting this episode out real quick, but we'll see in a couple of weeks if this still exists.
I totally get, you know, the brouhaha and all the media attention that this would have gotten, right? But, I mean, really, logistically speaking, this is not going to get Biden 500,000 more whatever. Nobody's getting a green card in 6 months or
whatever. But it's only for people who are married to U.S. citizens. So you have 500,000 U.S. citizens who suddenly have spouses who qualify for status. It's a lot of people.
So those 500 people are going to vote.
Oh, you mean the spouses are
yes.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Okay.
People have been waiting for a long time and they understand.
How long have these people been married? At least how long?
At least minimum 2 to 5 to 10 years. And they have children.
Yeah. At the end of the day, he's trying to do something favorable for the numbers, for the polls. Let's be real. This is all politically motivated. But what is the smart thing to do if you do have these political motivations? It's to put things in place that is less controversial, right? Things that are less controversial. So what's the least controversial thing you could do? Well, he comes out with this program. It has two parts. One is this, right, which is U.S. citizens, spouses of U.S. citizens who've been here over 10 years. I mean, that's a pretty high, just the 10 years is a pretty high burden, because if you've been here 10 years, you're probably contributing to society. You're probably paying your taxes.
Yes.
You haven't been deported, so you're not criminal. You don't have a criminal record.
Right.
You know, like these are generally desirable immigrants in the big scheme of things, if you look at it from a political perspective, right? That's number one. And then the second part of the program that we haven't talked about yet, but we'll talk about it in a second, is for DACA recipients, so our Dreamers, giving them a pathway through employment-based immigration for those that didn't go out and find love and don't have family members. And again, what are some of the most desirable, you know, I use that in quotation, all immigrants are desirable, but you know, on a political level, when you look at this in this big scheme of politics, DACA and Dreamers are very desirable immigrants. They're higher educated, came in really young.
These are
the kids that came
when they were minors.
Correct.
Exactly. Not,
they're like mostly United States citizens in their minds.
I mean, I have some that don't speak Spanish.
They don't speak Spanish.
You know, like they've been educated
here
their
whole
lives.
They've never been to their home country.
Yeah.
Because it was their parents that entered illegally with
and brought
them as minors.
For the most part. So, not all, but for the most part.
And they have never been back.
Yeah.
So they've been here since they like 13, 16.
Some even younger, you know,
like 2 years old.
And part of the DACA program requires that you get an education, at least a GED, but right. most of them are college educated. Most of them are professionals. You know, I represent one that works at the airport doing like aerospace engineering. I have another one. I have lawyers that are DACA recipients that I represent, you know, like there's.
I have engineers. I have computer science. I have one that is like, he was super smart. He had like MIT scholarship.
That it's so like, DACA, as far as DACA recipients, they're very desirable immigrants. So that's the other part of the program, is that they're enabling pathways to employment based.
Well, we don't know is what that means, because it's like kind of
what
weird.
Is this, an H-1B, like when you're already here?
No,
like,
what
is this employment?
You want to explain?
A labor cert?
That labor cert is mostly, I think, what it is. But the weird thing is that they can already know, like they're like in the process of getting that, but labor cert is a process in which you have an offer for an employment and the employer is going to give you your residency, right? But you have to be the same. You have to enter the United States legally and remain legally all the time.
Right. So that's the problem. These are the same issues with the other people.
Right.
They enter illegally. So they got the same problem for employment-based immigration. And the idea of doing it retroactively, that you were saying that's not fair, I had to have already been married, is they don't want an influx of people running in, you know,
getting married just because they get to be
or
married.
Going to the courthouse tomorrow because suddenly this program came out, you know. So generally they only make it, you know, looking backwards and not looking forward. But
and that's when they ask you, oh, should I get married? Yes. I always ask
I'm tired of telling people to go get married.
Because you never know. The thing is that that's the thing. The law changes all the time. And usually when the change comes, it's not like, oh, next week we're going to do this. No, no, no. By the time they say that, it's like whoever was here, whoever had this, is already like into the law. But everybody else is like, sorry to you.
That's right.
So if they come and like we're living together, they get married. But why? Because you never know.
Listen, I'll give you another example. And I don't know if you do this, but I do this all the time. So you can, if you're a U.S. citizen, you can petition for your siblings, and your sibling, the sibling to sibling wait list is like
a gazillion years,
15 years,
15, it's like 15 to 25 years.
You showed me on the plane, some tables that
I think it's more than, I think it's up to 20 on most of the categories
now. It was 18
now, there
when
you go.
We were traveling
so it's
a couple
like
years
20,
ago.
And then if you're like Mexican or Filipino, which has even longer lists, it's like 40 years. Okay, like it's the list.
You're going to retire in the U.S., guys.
Yeah. Right. The waiting list is absolutely absurd for U.S. citizens petitioning for siblings. And yet, every time someone comes to talk to me about this, I tell them this. I explain, because lots of people don't explain and they're stealing your money. But I will explain, you know, this wait list is 20 years. However, my advice is still that you file it. And right. I'll tell you why. Because one of the very few, we haven't had congressional reform in a very long time in immigration, right? We have been desperate for it forever. We need it desperately. If someday these two sides of our aisle actually get something done, which has to happen at some point, right? The immigration system will be reformed at some point. I mean, I've been waiting my entire time practicing, but that's besides the point. It's the last reform was before I started practicing law. But regardless, if they ever get it together, one of the few things that both sides of the aisle have agreed on in the past when negotiations have been going on that hasn't worked out because they haven't been able to reach a final resolution, but they've actually agreed on this point, is getting rid of the sibling to sibling category.
Getting rid of it altogether.
It's actually been agreed to by a lot of Democrats and Republicans over the years. They just haven't been able to agree on everything else. So we've never been able to get some comprehensive immigration reform passed. But that particular point is one of the few they agree on, getting rid of this category possibly allocating those numbers to other categories. So every time someone comes to see me, I explain this and I say, if you have any hope of someday getting your sibling here, it is worth spending the money to get those sibling applications filed like today. Because worst case scenario goes nowhere. It's not that expensive. You didn't waste that much money.
Right.
Best case scenario, if we ever get some comprehensive immigration form, I mean, this is a prediction, this is speculation, but more likely than not, this category will disappear and you will be grandfathered in, possibly move faster while they get the line done because no one else will be entering the line, possibly move faster, but at a minimum, you'll be grandfathered in. And so you heard it here now, you know, like go file your sibling applications, even if it seems hopeless, because you never know. And that's the kind of advice we have to give every day, where I'm like,
and I'm 10 years ago, they're like, okay, but you told me 10 years ago that it was 10 years. And now we're like 10 years. And you're like, oh, you have to wait more.
Now but it's 18. True. Like this list.
It is true. Like I petitioned for my brother, and it was 10 years ago, and we thought, okay, by the time his son finish middle school, they will be here. And now he's going to his high school, and we're still have like 4 more years to go. So yeah. Now I don't even know if they're going to be able to do college, and they have like all this prepaid college thing, all this thing.
Yeah.
He's like taking AP classes, all this. And I'm like, I don't know if you're going to be able to be here when you finish your...
You're
going to
be processing a student visa for that kid. Exactly. Not
Yeah.
Okay, if you're married to a resident, you still have to go into the category.
So I don't. So let's say I'm Leslie, and I found love living in El Salvador, and he's a legal permanent resident, and he comes back to the U.S., but I have no way in at the moment.
No, oh, he needs to petition for you.
And you're telling me that shit's gonna take years?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
What do you mean? What about all these stupid TV shows that's like my fiance? What is this bullshit you tell me about?
Sure, the 90-day fiance.
And where is this 90 days being spent?
Oh, no, no.
Not in the U.S.?
Oh, no. Listen, Linda.
She's offshore, bitch.
Once they're here, they can do their 90-day fiance. But that process, the problem is the waiting, the processing time.
Right, but that is a U.S. citizen.
Yeah. Fiances are only for U.S. citizens.
Oh,
yes.
Let's start there.
The law school problem here, I didn't read correctly, was lawful permanent resident.
Yeah. So back to the point really quick about time, that's what happens with the border, like what they call the border crisis and people saying, well, they can follow the legal path. But if the legal path takes 8 years, no one's going to follow it. Like I have so many clients that have pre-approvals for things that'll actually come across the border against legal advice.
Right.
And now don't qualify and are here illegally.
Yes, yes.
And we have a whole conversation about this was really dumb. And they're like, we were starving. Like, what are you going to do about it? Like, I mean, it's hard to argue with that, you know, like that's the part that people miss. But anyways, there are other programs like the parole that she was about to explain. Yeah.
So that's the thing that, yes, they were saying like, oh, because now we came with this parole idea where like, Nicaragua.
Why don't you explain Cuba, that program to anybody listening who doesn't know what we're talking about?
And Venezuela, then they can come to, they can, if they have a sponsor, which is like almost anybody can be a sponsor.
So yeah.
You can have
this
like.
It's not vetted, okay.
No. Your neighbor, vetted, your friend.
But you don't have to have a like.
The hot guy in the corner.
A familiar relationship with a sponsor, right? They can be a United States citizen, resident, CPS. Just asylum.
Cualquiera, coño. Cualquiera que no sea legal, ilegal, acá.
Would you like to sponsor someone? We can find you someone. No, okay.
And then you can sponsor them to come into the United States, and you, as a sponsor, will like make sure that they don't incur like into the public charge to the government. So you're going to ensure that they're going to get your, like the. I don't know, the school, the house.
They're not
going to
be homeless. They're not going to be homeless. Exactly.
They're going to work. Exactly. They're going to contribute to society.
But the problem is it takes a year or two to get these people in.
So let's say I'm in Nicaragua, and now we have this, what is it?
TP? Parole. Yes.
So this is not TPS.
That's different.
This is parole. So I'm in Nicaragua, and I say I want to go to the U.S. I find my good friend, Alina,
who's
going to sponsor me, and then I still got to go to this consulate to get clicky-clicky. Or I can't come in. Yeah. So it might take me 2 years anyway.
Yes.
But so at least I have a way in now.
Right. But you decide that like you will be waiting for two. Like my client from Haiti was waiting for a year and a half.
No. Haiti se jodió. I learned that 5 minutes ago. Haiti is closed down.
You don't,
go to another country.
You don't have to go to the consulate. It's just an app that you download.
Yeah. It's a little different with the humanitarian parole program.
So it's better. You don't have to go to the consulate.
Yeah. But I'll give you a but. The humanitarian parole program, when it first came out, it was a godsend. And we were all going nuts, filing a million of these. They were getting approved in
2 weeks.
Even when it got slower, we were still looking at 3 to 5 months. So it's the same problem with all these programs. Like the moment they get approved, it's a mad dash. It's great. It runs great for about 6 months. And then the backlog starts because they can't process it fast enough.
Because
and the backlog
like
gets slower and slower. And slower. So now the humanitarian parole program, which we got lots of people in with the humanitarian parole program, now we're looking at years again.
Yeah. But this parole, let's say I come in with this parole.
Yes.
And then I have a path to a green card.
Yes. If you marry to a United Citizen.
If you find love.
That's a whole other. No, wait a minute. Like.
You so have I, to
So I have some stats. Hold on, I get to sit here in limbo again.
No, 2 years.
You get two years.
And what happens after 2 years?
Bye bye.
No fucking way.
Bye bye.
That doesn't even make any sense. What the hell am I coming here for to hang out for two years?
You're getting out of your, you know, what did he call it? Shithole country. And no, I don't feel that way, but that is what Trump said. Shithole countries. You're getting out of a place that you are desperate to get out of for 2 years. And you've basically got 2 years to figure something else out.
Because the regimes in Latin America just improve so much every couple.
Yeah, every 2 years they fall in.
Another dictator gets, okay, all right.
You know, and then we'll have another Band-Aid of some sort in 2 years. Like, this is our lives. It's everything is piecemeal. Everything is, we'll see where we're at in 2 years. And I hate to say that's the advice, but oftentimes that's the advice. And we have clients that jump from program to program and we keep legal in those ways. And it is what it is.
So like you could jump from like student visa or.
Because who else has the TPS is also Venezuelans, right?
Yes. TPS is temporary protected status for anybody who's listening. And those are generally temporary status that is granted due to political situation, natural disasters. Right. Like Haiti got it when the earthquakes hit.
There was like a hurricane. Salvador, Mitch,
yeah.
That it was like Nicaragua. It was like
many years ago. Yeah,
that was like 1998 and 2000. So they have been here from like 20 years with the TPS.
So this gets you a mechanism to come in,
correct, and stay lawfully.
No mechanism to come in.
It's just like the parole in place. You have to have already been here when this gets granted.
Oh.
You can't flood the border and come get it now.
Exactly.
If you were already here, then you get granted. Yeah. So Trump was the first president that refused to renew TPS. It was a huge deal during his administration.
Because it was something nobody like even thought about it. Like, what?
Like it was like unfathomable news. That would happen. I mean, Bush came out on the news complaining about Trump. Hello? Like,
what are you doing?
Like, what are you thinking? We're losing taxpayers for no reason.
take it out. Like, at the end.
It was enjoined. He was sued. And ultimately, the lawsuits won. And that's the only reason TPS got renewed during the Trump administration. It was not because of Trump, but because the lawsuits won out against him. Yeah.
So when somebody comes, right, this work permit gets them what? I assume a social security number?
Sure.
Which is what we input into payroll, right?
Right.
I'm sorry. Does payroll alert me 18 months later that beep, beep, this is expiring? How the fuck would I know that?
Because you do I-9 compliance.
¿Qué es eso? ADT, ADP, whatever. ADT. ADP, gusto.
Every employer
explain I-9 to her.
I think payroll makes them do this, right? They put in their
yes, but still hopefully separate, right? You have to have the I-9. The I-9 is like a system where you go
it's a form.
Input your information of your employer
of
your employee, and it will tell you if that employee is authorized to work.
And it will spit out a date, I imagine. It'll tell you this person. And I'm supposed to keep track of that date is what you're telling me.
Your HR department should be keeping track of all of that.
And especially if you have 25 employees or more, because then you come like with the new law.
So let's talk about 1718 and Ron DeSantis. DeSantis. Wow. So if we start talking Florida politics, you know, there was 1718 that became law last year in Florida. And I'm sure even if you're not in Florida, you've heard this on the news because we were so special in Florida here.
We always are.
And there were many, many clauses about 1718. That's a whole other podcast for another day. But one of those clauses are the severe penalties that have been put in place for people, employers specifically, who have over 25 employees. If you have over 25 employees, you not only have to I-9, which has always been a federal requirement, but you actually have to use the E-Verify online system to make sure you're not just filling out the form and like checking the box. You actually have to go into the system
and check
that those people are lawful. And there are severe penalties now
in
Florida.
Like $1,000 per day.
It's like per day. Not just $1,000. $1,000 per day per employee. A violation for not complying with this. It is severe. Like, it'll take you under after a month. It's crazy. And so you can imagine that employers are scared. rightfully so. And on top of that, driver's frankly.
License, which is oh my.
Don't talk to me about driver's licenses. Okay.
That is great. I don't understand what is going on with the driver's license, but these DMVs are insane. There's no appointments, right? So they expect everybody has to have a driver's license, because if you don't have a driver's license, then because of the Florida law too, then you have a problem also, right? So you can have like even the special police to protect you because you don't have a driver's license. Oh, but there's an appointment for driver's license.
Tell me about it.
And now you for have 2 years. You have to pay this guy to go, like wake up at 2 a.m. and make a line. So you can get your license if you're lucky. If not, then you don't. You have to wait.
I didn't know about the service where the guy gets paid to wait in the line.
Oh, yeah. Morning. Or you can pay someone to stand there.
I have a driver's license right now.
I'm not going to go at 2 a.m. by myself with my son.
Stand in the line. You can pay someone to stand in the line for you. Stand in the line,
but it was 2 a.m. and then, no, sorry, there's like no more. Because only 25 spots and then... You have to go back tomorrow at 1 a.m.
in the morning.
But nevertheless, even if you make these lines, in Florida at least, there's something called the acceptable documents table.
And they don't accept. And then they say, oh no.
And they find most documents unacceptable. Unacceptable.
And everything is and unacceptable.
You get a call like at 6 o'clock in the morning. They're saying they're not going to accept my documents.
I've been finding a line for 3 days.
Like, since 1 a.m. And you said that this is a document. I'm like, yes, it is. I don't know. Like, ask them to talk to, like, and then this DMV people, they're like, they don't understand. Go. Do not talk to me. What? But that is an acceptable document. It says so right there. It has extended their time for 18 months until the immigration decides to, like, do whatever.
Leslie knows very well that they're not helpful.
The one that I hate the most is, like,
they send you away without giving you information, like, maybe you're eligible for an ID instead of a driver's license.
Oh, my God. It's like the first
allegedly.
Time stop. I'm like, what? I had an appointment.
I had many.
I just put the wrong code. And she was like, and I was like, could you let me explain? No. You have to understand. I make the appointment.
They're very powerful.
My child is like dying. She's like, no. We're coming back at 2 a.m.
It's absurd.
No,
absurd. The DMV is absurd. But anyway, so they have this acceptable documents table, which is like 80 pages. And based on your category, then you know what documents you have to bring based on your immigration status. And so it's an immigration analysis of what documents to bring with you. This doesn't even start
by the lady at the window.
By the lady at the window.
Oh, qué lindo.
Yeah. So you can imagine how well that goes.
Fantastic. That is just fantastic.
Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah. It's hard. And then, of course, you know, your clients are from a foreign country, generally new to the country. They don't know how to explain themselves. Half the time, the lady on the other side doesn't speak Spanish or doesn't speak their language. You know, like it's a shitstorm.
It is. Like, oh my God. I don't know why we get on so much of topic, but yes.
No. But the fact that you have to hire an immigration attorney to go with you to the DMV, and I've been hired to go to the DMV, is absurd. Like, just if that doesn't speak to the red tape you need to pass to deal with the DMV in Florida, I don't know what does. To go stand in line at the DMV in Florida.
Like, and then so the people are like, come on, like, those immigrants are like, I don't understand.
They're special.
So if I have more than 25 employees, then there's what? An additional system in the payroll?
No.
That
it's not
now
in the
reports
payroll.
To the state of Florida?
Nope. Like is the E-Verify with USCIS?
It's a federal
to
government.
To make sure that the document that they're presenting...
Because of Ron DeSantis' bullshit. Now the federal government... What now?
So the federal government has always had this program called E-Verify where you can go verify people. And as a dutiful employer, most people should be going on there and using it. But it's not mandatory for smaller employers.
Exactly.
So what Ron DeSantis did is he made it mandatory for anybody with more than 25 employees, thus bringing the minimum down significantly. So now much smaller employers are forced to use the E-Verify program.
But how is the state system and the federal system talking to each other?
Hold on. Let me get the emoji.
Well,
In that case, the thing is that he opens the door to whatever he wants to do to whoever he wants.
Porque puede decir lo que quiera, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, he can say whatever he wants. But is the federal government now sharing with Ron DeSantis?
No, it's not like that. Like, the thing is that he can investigate this this business, right? Uh-huh. You have to show me business that you're complying, right? So I can choose the business. It's not the federal government that is going to give me the information.
It's in the other direction.
Now the business is going to tell me, okay, show me that you comply.
Like some agency in the state of Florida is going to go, you business, you have over 25 and you were supposed to do X and I can prove you did.
Correct. And then show me that you did.
And so they'll penalize you with a nice bill when they find you.
I don't know, like a witch hunt. Okay, so Today we're going, let's look for five more businesses today. I don't know.
Right,
how
and you could absolutely,
it,
can do. You know, like, this could be a very biased.
Exactly.
I imagine it is not like, even pretending to be random as to which businesses have more than 25 employees, and most of them might be.
They're against the law, like supposedly. So yes, you can be.
Has this thing been struck down for discriminatory intent?
Not yet.
Like, this sounds like a constitutional issue.
There's some things that had been like.
There's already some lawsuits.
But we're still waiting.
The 1718 has a lot of other anti-immigrant clauses some of which have already started being challenged. So we'll see. But like everything in the legal system, it'll take years before we'll have a result.
Like a special police. They had a budget for like a special police.
Oh, yeah. He was going to make
a militia thing. I don't know. Like it was crazy.
It was what do they call it? The National Guard. It was the Florida Guard.
Yes.
And it was going to be at the whim of the governor.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And they had like a Florida special Guard. Budget.
Yeah, they actually passed the budget for it. Yeah.
Not for schools.
But that's not for schools. Oh, DMV.
DMV. Definitely not for the DMV.
DeSantis was going to have his own guard, you know, for anything he feels needs attention.
Yeah.
I see.
When there's emergencies.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That they will like give him the they can just stop immigrants, because remember the police cannot stop you for immigration violations. They can stop you because you commit like there's a crime or because you're like driving without like there's a traffic violation, and they can call ICE to detain you, right? Or they can put you in jail because of your traffic violation. And then ICE will detain you.
Right, because you're already sitting at the jail.
But this one was going to be like a special, they have like special.
That I can detain you myself for
immigration
your immigration status.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was bad.
That there's actually another section of 1718 is about criminal penalties for entering Florida without being in status. And I don't want to go into the details, but all I was going to say is there's actually been 3 traffic citations that I'm aware of so far that have been issued. My understanding is they were all by the same patrol officer. I'm not sure if that's
shocking.
But the lawsuits have begun. Uh-huh. So we'll see what happens with those. So little by little, parts of 1718 are being struck down. There was other things about hospitals required to ask for immigration status now as part of the intake. And so you can imagine the chilling effect that would have on someone who's out of status to go to a hospital.
Because if you go and you ask and you say, I decline to, you don't care, right? You say, I decline to tell you my immigration status.
But it's scary.
But you know your immigration status.
Yeah.
But if you don't have any.
No, if I say that and no driver's license, they're going to call ICE on me.
That's the fear.
It's not what's actually happening, but it is the fear, right? And that's the whole purpose of the law, is to instill the fear.
Not, it's that fear. Now they're going. So I'm not going to go to the hospital. So what are we going to do?
And hospitals have to report how much money they're spending on the people who are marking the out of status box. Like there's now reporting requirements on the fiscal side. Yes. To report to the state. About, you know, how much money they're spending on these people, et cetera. There are a million clauses. There's some clauses on DNA sharing, the immigration incarceration facilities, DNA share now with the federal and with the criminal incarceration facilities. Yeah, that's another interesting one. There's a lot of clauses. We could have a whole episode on 1718.
They're taking your DNA even if you haven't committed a crime, just because of your immigration
status.
Right.
Well, the argument is that the immigration violation is a crime, right? And so that's how Florida is reading
it. But it's a civil, really. That's the difference.
But it's civil and it's civil. An administrative court it's process. Civil. So, yeah.
So, no, it's not a crime.
Okay, so there's definitely some constitutional arguments to be made here in these lawsuits. But we'll see. We'll see how it progresses.
Unfortunately, immigration has become such a subject that half of the country see it as like, oh, you're stealing, you're like, this immigrants are coming to like take everything away from us. And they don't understand how difficult the situation has been for these people. It's not that.
But they don't care about that. They just don't care. You know, I'll take it the other way, though. There's this wonderful video, and I encourage anybody listening or watching to look it up. It's actually Ronald Reagan, and there is a speech Ronald Reagan gave, and he stood on the podium and he said, I do not understand, why don't we give them all work permits so they can pay taxes? And every time someone starts arguing with me, yeah, I'm like, oh, hail Reagan, you know. Like, every time I have someone conservative or Republican start arguing with me, I'm like, guys, the anti-immigrant sentiment is not a Republican conservative thing. Like, Republicans generally are fiscally conservative, and there's so many good programs that could be put in place and so many great policies that are very fiscally conservative that would add to our wealth as a nation, especially when it comes to people paying taxes and work permits and those sort of programs. And, you know, that's what Reagan's speech is about in particular. But we've made it into more of a social issue over time.
Yeah.
And that has really evolved the conversation into more of a hate conversation and a xenophobia conversation. And that's really not what it should be about. Like, we really kind of need to take a step back and go back to looking at it the way politics looked at this before, you know. And it wasn't perfect before, but it was a real conversation about the economic impact of immigration on the U.S. and not a, these immigrants are taking my jobs. No, bitch, you're not scrubbing the toilet. Okay, like, let's be real. You're not
picking oranges.
Okay, you're not picking oranges. Oh, you know, there's
the school. Okay, probably the first few months they're not paying their taxes. But most likely what they need, the first thing they ask you when you're coming to you is like, how do I get my work permit and my social security
number?
That's the first
thing. And the moment you are lawfully employed, almost every employer is taking out payroll tax. Like, it is not even up to them.
That's
like,
it
solves the issue.
Then they ask you, oh, like, how at the end? No. The first thing, the first thing you have to tell me, how do I get my work permit? That's
all they care about.
Primary importance. That's the thing that I need right now. Later, we discuss whatever you want to discuss, but tell me how you get my work permit.
Right. And that makes perfect sense.
So there are programs that could be made. There are things that would have some really fantastic economic impact for the U.S. that, you know, a work permit program. Let's start there. Let's call it that. Just as simple as that.
Yes.
And that would make huge changes for a lot of people coming into the U.S. that we're not even talking about a pathway. I mean, yes, we'd love a pathway. We're immigration attorneys. Right, we want a path. But let's say there's no path to citizenship. There are so many great programs that Congress could pass to at least get some of these people out of limbo, working lawfully and paying taxes, that would have amazing financial benefits for the country.
Right.
I mean, you know, we used to be the place where all of our amazing superstars would go, right? We were known for, you know, the brain drain abroad. We'd bring in all the brilliant immigrants. Like, we wanted those people. We still do that. Those visas still exist. But it's so hard. They're so hard to get.
19% chance to get a like H-1B visa.
Yeah.
It's like, this is how you bring in all these people that are like insanely smart, right? That you want them here. You want them here. You want to attract those people here to come here, to study here, to be here.
Yeah.
To make this country great. Yes, we want it. We think our country, like, I'm an immigrant and I love this country. I think it's absolutely best. It's amazing. It has a lot of potential. It has like it gives you so many possibilities, right? But we can open it to everybody. And there's space for everybody to come here. Yes, I understand legally. But the thing is that if you don't let them come legally, they're going to come illegally. They're desperate.
Yeah. That's, I think, the real message. Yeah. So on that note.
And with that,
any closing thoughts for our listening and viewing audience?
No, it's just, this is maybe just like, not everybody come here just because they want to screw everybody over. It's just, they're desperate. They're here and I know they're like in the news and everything. There's like this immigrants that want to come here and like steal their stuff. That's not what they want. They just want to be free. They just want to be peace and, like, be able to provide for their families like everybody else.
Yeah.
And they just need a venue to for them to do it. And if you start, like, thinking about them like they're, like, I don't know, like the drug dealers or, like, gang members, they're, like, minority, okay? And then we try to weed them out, like, quickly and send them home. It's not that they will stop deporting people. There have been more deportations in this year than, like, in the past 5 years. It's not that they will stop deporting people. We are. But
you know,
we're leaving the people that are here.
I love to use the statistic from Obama's years. There was in the immigration circle, Obama was known as the deporter-in-chief. He was the president under which the most deportations happened. It was actually under Obama. And despite that, most people didn't argue about it. And while we don't love that it was the highest number of deportations in the immigration world, the truth is that something Obama's administration did well is they started prioritizing who to move forward on which removal cases. And they started prioritizing people who did have criminal records, who did have serious convictions. And they were able to quickly deport a lot of people who weren't otherwise eligible for relief in ways that other administrations hadn't done. Because, again, not everyone is a priority. If everyone is a priority, there are no priorities. It's literally the opposite of the definition. So by putting in a priority system, Obama was actually able to create more deportations than any other president before. And while we can argue all day about the good and the bad of that, at the end of the day, looking at it big picture, he did it better than others did. And, you know, arguably more successfully than many others did. And I'm not saying it was perfect and I'm not saying it was imperfect, but there's definitely ways to improve the system, and the standstill we're at is just not working for anyone. And we need comprehensive immigration reform.
Yes.
Like, I don't know how many times the immigration bar needs to tell people this. Like, it's ridiculous. But anyways, with that, this has been Lasha Ishinoa with Adriana Gomez. Thank you, Adriana, for joining us today.
Thank you.
And please listen in and catch us again next week.